You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, indeed, it's time for Dear Science. AUT's Alan Blackman joins us again live in the studio. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing good, Shamina.
That is awesome. So first up today, we're talking about how police said last week that they've uncovered a new way that methamphetamine is being smuggled into New Zealand. Can you tell me a bit more about this?
Okay, so as you say, last week four guys were in court and they were charged with importing not methamphetamine, but a thing called T-Boc methamphetamine into the country. So how this all worked, apparently the stuff was packaged up as being laundry powder, washing powder or something, or washing liquid. And it came in on a boat from China in January, and customs went over it. And they found that something was dissolved in the liquid. And this stuff that was dissolved in the liquid was a thing called T-Boc methamphetamine. So as I'm sure your listeners are aware, there are tests for methamphetamine-specific tests. So if customs finds a white powder or whatever in a package, they can do a very quick test and see if this stuff is methamphetamine or not. What people are now doing is masking the methamphetamine. So you've still got the methamphetamine molecule in there, but what you do, you know, what chemists do, is that they basically add a little bit of another molecule to methamphetamine, and they stick it on a nitrogen atom in the methamphetamine. And what that does then is that it renders the tests, the specific tests for methamphetamine, pretty useless, okay? So this stuff will then pass those tests, and then it comes into the country, they give it to their chemists, and it's a very, very simple thing to do to take this other molecule off the methamphetamine, and then you make pure methamphetamine again.
So it just goes back to what it was.
Yeah. And this is anybody who's done any university chemistry will know this sort of stuff. It's a very, very common procedure when you're making molecules. You have to put some bits on at some stage in a synthesis and then take them off later to stop the thing reacting in the wrong way. And so these chemists in China, which is where this came from, so obviously this is the way that they're doing things now in an attempt to get past all of the stringent tests at the border. And this is the first time that this has been found in New Zealand, so this T-Boc methamphetamine. But what has happened previously was in Australia last year, they found a very similar T-Boc ecstasy. And again, they found that in something that was labeled as something else. They got a bit suspicious and analyzed it and found that, yes, this is what it was. And again, you know, they can easily treat this with the chemists. All you've got to do is just a little bit of acid and it falls off and you get ecstasy out of it. And so there was a paper published in an academic journal that I just read last year by these Australians who were involved in doing this. And surprisingly, in the paper, they said, you know, this is the first time we've seen this sort of thing done with ecstasy. Possibly it could be done with other drugs like methamphetamine. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
Now,
okay.
Now they've gone and done it. So obviously, now that the authorities know that it's out there, a test will be developed for this stuff as well. But as with so many things with drugs, it's a matter of the authorities being one step behind the chemists.
Right, yeah, I was going to say that. It's kind of a race to kind of try to build something that doesn't pop up in the tests, right? I mean, it's the same with drugs and sport, from what I understand.
Yes,
that people are developing drugs that then don't show in the tests, and then people, you know, authorities are constantly trying to catch up.
Yes, yep. And of course, this has got legal ramifications as well, because what then is classed as an illegal drug? We know that methamphetamine P is an illegal drug. Is T-Boc methamphetamine covered in the legislation? And obviously, if it's not, then it's going to have to be. Presumably it is. I imagine, I haven't read the legislation, but I presume that it's wide enough that they can encompass any sort of close derivative of methamphetamine. But it really is. I hate to say it's a losing battle, but it's a very, very tough one.
Right, yeah, exactly. You kind of can't foresee what's going to happen. You kind of, it has to be a reactionary thing almost.
Of course, I think you're absolutely right. It's always reactionary, you know, unless you ban everything.
Right, yeah. People would not be too happy with that.
No, indeed not, no.
And so moving on to our next topic for today, a new paper published tries to clarify a debate around reaching the lowest possible temperature. Can you talk me through this?
Okay, so there's a little thing called the third law of thermodynamics. There are in fact, four laws of thermodynamics, as I always tell my first year classes: the first law of thermodynamics, the second law of thermodynamics, the third law of thermodynamics, and
the fourth law.
No, see, you fell into my trap. It's the there's a thing called the zeroth law.
Okay.
Believe it or not, okay, because they got the first and second and third laws first, and then they realised it didn't make any sense without having something before them, so they made up the zeroth law.
I see.
There you go, trivia for the day, folks. Didn't you just need
like,
to know that?
Shit, what are we doing? Zeroth. That makes sense.
Okay, so there's the third law of thermodynamics, and basically what that says is that you can't reach absolute zero. So absolute zero is the coldest possible temperature. We had a wee chat about this, I think, a month or so ago on this very show. And this was a law that was proposed on the basis of some experimental evidence and some theory as well, but it's never been proven. And this law was developed or proposed, I guess, in 1912, around about 1912, by a guy called Walter Nernst, who, in addition to winning the Nobel Prize, was born exactly 100 years to the day before me, so I feel a kinship to
it's your birthday that you share. It's pretty special.
So I bet he never knew that. So he said that you can't reach absolute zero in a finite number of steps, and that's the way that you cool things down. You cool things down in steps. When you get to very, very, very low temperatures, you've got to cool them down in steps. And Nernst said it would take an infinite number of steps to get to absolute zero. And that's a proposal, but it's never been proved. And so last week, there was a paper appeared in Nature Communications, that very, very good journal. A couple of guys at University College London came out with essentially a mathematical proof saying that, no, he's absolutely right. You can't do it in a finite number of steps. The reason being, as I understand it, it's pretty complicated stuff, is that there's a limit to how fast you can cool things, okay? And if there's a limit to how fast you can cool things and you need a whole heap of steps to get to absolute zero, then you're never going to get there. You're going to do it in increments, boom, 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 boom. Each of them are going to take a particular time, and so therefore you can't actually get there in a finite number of steps. That's essentially the guts of it. But it is kind of nice. It's the first time it's been proved, and you know, it's purely academic, but it's not purely academic, because it's got implications in things called quantum computers, which are going to be the next generation of computers that are going to be infinitely more powerful than anything that we've got today. And as the name suggests, they use quantum effects to operate, and these quantum effects are very, 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 very subtle. They're easily disturbed, and so therefore these computers, if and when they come into being, you're going to have to operate them at extremely low temperatures. When we're talking extremely low temperatures, we're talking temperatures approaching absolute zero, negative 273 degrees Celsius. And so that's where all of this has some applicability.
Right. This kind of has a direct implication for, like, almost a direct commercial implication for the creation of, I don't know, future technology.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the way they'll spin it in the ground implications. Yep.
This is why this is important, because money.
Absolutely.
And so lastly, a lot of us have probably heard of the infamous Milgram experiment, which scientists have now managed to replicate. Can you remind listeners about what this experiment is?
Most certainly. Now, every year the film festival rolls around, and every year I never get to as many movies as I want to. And last year there was a movie called Experimenter. I don't know if either of you guys saw that.
No, I didn't.
And this was a movie actually about the Milgram experiment. And for those of you who don't know, so in 1961, a guy, Stanley Milgram, who was at Yale University, did an experiment where he was looking at obedience and essentially how far people would go to obey people in authority, essentially. So the way that he did this was that he recruited people off the street, and he told them that they were going to be involved in a psychology study about memory. And there were three people involved in the experiment. There was the scientist, there was Milgram himself, there was a teacher, a so-called teacher, and a so-called learner, okay? And the teacher were the people off the street, okay?
Mm.
And so the teacher and the learner sat in separate rooms. And what the teacher had to do was, over an intercom thing, he had to read out a series of pairs of words, and then the learner would supposedly remember them, and then the guy would, or lady would read out the first word, and then the other
person in the booth would have to repeat the second word, so he'd have to match those pairs. Now, if they got it wrong, the teacher was told to give them an electric shock by pressing a button, okay? And so beforehand, they were shown all the setup and everything. They were shown the learner being strapped into this thing that looked like an electric chair, apparently, and, you know, electrodes applied and all of that sort of stuff. And then they went back into separate rooms, couldn't see each other, and then the experiment started. Now, every time, as I said, the learner got something wrong, the teacher was told to press a button and that would give them an electric shock. And the electric shocks went up in 15-volt increments and until they reached about 450 volts. And so the actual experiment was to see how far people would go in pressing this button. Now, obviously, every time they pressed the button, they could hear the person in the booth screaming.
Because I was going to say, like, they could hear them, right? Yes, like, that was all part of it. It was an actor, you know, making these sound effects.
Absolutely.
As they were getting electrocuted or, you know, supposedly electrocuted. So, which is, I don't know, pretty uncomfortable.
And some of the actors were told to tell the guys that they had a heart condition, you know, just to make it even worse.
Just to mix it up a little bit more. Oh, man.
And so they kept on getting them wrong and they kept on pressing the button and they'd hear these screams. And they'd turn around to Milgram and say, oh, look, you know, we can't go on. And Milgram would keep on telling them, look, the experiment depends on you keeping going.
That's
it's
right,
absolutely vital. You can't stop now. Please keep going. The experiment depends on it. And so these people kept on going all the way up to 450 volts, pressing the button. Now, before the experiment, the hypothesis was that perhaps about 3% of people would go all the way to 450 volts. And in fact, it was 65% of people did it. And that was, you know, basically showing that people will bow to authority and basically do what they're told, or the majority of people certainly will. And of course, you know, 1961 wasn't that far after the Second World War, and we had a lot of people saying in that they were only following orders, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, this
that's
was
right. People sort of extrapolated it to, you know, sense of things like that.
And so that was the guts of the whole experiment, and that made him a sort of a very famous man in the world of psychology. And so this experiment has been replicated around the world, and very, very recently this has been published again, another experiment. This was done in Poland this time. And so the results were a frightening 90% of the participants went all the way to 450 volts
so
this time.
Significantly so higher than what it was the first time round.
And, yeah, I'm sure people will be thinking of reasons for that. You know, Poland was a communist country for a long time and they were, you know, used to obeying orders, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that has something to do with it, but I'm sure it'll keep the psychologists busy for a while, these results. But, you know, absolutely horrifying experiment, but,
totally.
But you know, a very, very interesting insight into the state of humanity.
For sure. I mean, is it about obedience, though, or is it about, you know, if you're there and there's this very official-looking person in a lab coat...
Yes.
That seems like they have control over things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess it is. I don't know. Well, just because it's a safe thing, you know, you think like, okay, well, if this person says it's okay, then...
Then it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And, that's the important part of it, I imagine, is the whole authoritarian figure, you know.
Right.
It's so somebody who supposedly has knowledge and seems to know what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. That it's just like, okay, I trust this person. Mm. This person is legitimate. Yeah. Therefore... I'm gonna do this thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So. scary.
Very, very interesting stuff.
For sure.
In the psychology world. So. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you once again for joining us this week, Alan. We'll see you again next week.
My pleasure. See ya.
That was Dear Science.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.